We don't have a weight loss problem in America. Losing weight is easy. Keeping it off is the real challenge. These are some words of wisdom from Tom Venuto as he is back for part two of his interview. All this and more on episode 57 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Welcome back to the show. How are you doing this week, Jeff?
I'm doing excellent this week, but I think you're just trying to get out of this keeping it real section. So how are you doing this week, Russ?
Well, I'm going to try anything I can to get out of it. But as always here, the weigh-in at 243 pounds for this week. The eating goals, about 8 out of 10. Had a couple desserts this week. Enjoyed myself a little bit too much. Exercise goals, a 3 out of 10. Still no strenuous exercise, but I am still on my walking program, so that's working out. And my motivation for the week, a solid 10 out of 10. I am solidly into the next size smaller pants and that giant pile of skinny pants that taunts me on my shelf in the closet. It's well within sight, so I'm stoked about that. And also, I'm on the last notch of my current couple belts here, so looking forward to either drilling some holes in those or getting some new ones.
Well, that's really good to hear that you're right on your goals right now. I think the most important part of that is your motivation for the week. You have to think of your long-term goal, or I guess your midterm goal, which is this summer when you have your high school reunion. So how many times per day are you actually trying to visualize yourself wearing a nice, well-fitted suit, walking into that high school reunion, and all those girls that dumped you in high school looking at you going, oh man, that guy's hot. Why did we ever, you know, let him go?
It's too numerous to even comprehend how many times I think about myself in that situation. You know, it's just awesome. No, I do think about it on a daily basis. You know, I've got on a Facebook account and a bunch of my high school friends are on there and I keep looking at pictures going, you're fat. And I hope they're not listening right now. You're fat. And I'm going to look way better than you. And another friend of mine who said he was planning on losing weight. I know I talked to him a couple weeks after Christmas time when we were both hitting the dieting and working out. And talked to him just maybe a week or two ago, and he really hadn't gotten anywhere. So I'm hoping he's going to try to make that his goals too. We had a very similar goal, actually almost the same weight, but he was weighing in about 30 pounds heavier than I was at the time. So yeah, thinking about it every day and making sure that that's in my schedule, you know, check out those goals every day.
Well, if you think about it, every single day you're doing dozens and dozens of decisions which will help or hurt your weight loss goals. And having something like this in the back of your mind that really drives you, it makes you make all of these really good decisions throughout the day. And it's all these little tiny things that add up and make you successful over time.
Yeah, but I think we're keeping it a little too real this week. Why don't we get into our email and comments for this week?
All right, we're going to have a little bit shorter section than normal. We have a longer interview coming a little later in the show, but let's move into our first email, and this came in from Julie in Buffalo, and she wrote,
"Greetings, Russ and Jeff. I recently found your podcast on iTunes, and I love it. I'm a female, 42 years old, and I've been morbidly obese most of my adult life. At one point in my life, I weighed 335 pounds. This past fall, my friend, her daughter, and I decided to change our future by changing what we eat. We started the Weight Watchers online plan.
In the beginning, I weighed 289 pounds. I have been experiencing a 1 to 2 pound weight loss per week, except around the holidays. So far, I have lost about 45 pounds. I love the idea that I could eat fruit again. Those protein diets had me brainwashed, and I thought I would never be able to eat an apple again.
I am not married to the idea of paying an online service to keep track of my diet diary. They make it so easy. The points are calculated as soon as I put the variables and I have a record of what I ate and how much. They keep track of my weight for me online and I can chart my progress. It is all very positive. Just listening to your show makes me feel as if I could carry on this lifestyle without the Weight Watchers website's help. Is there anything that you could suggest that would be as simple and easy?
I have omitted one detail. I am a project manager and I am in hotels 300 days a year. I can honestly say I work very hard and walk vigorously at work about 7 miles a day. I say that to soften the next statement. I can't get into working out when I get home from work. I am exhausted, both mentally and physically. I want to, I feel compelled to, but I just can't get up off that hotel couch and go to another crappy hotel gym and risk falling on their cheap equipment. Do you have any tips for me?
I did get some rubber resistance bands to travel with. It is just so hard to feel like exercising. I know I can't do it on diet alone. It is nice and I feel better already, but the muscles need to be toned as I feed them with these good vegetables, fruits, and lean meats. I love the fresh aspect of my new lifestyle. Thank you for any advice you can give.
Well, first of all, congratulations on all of the weight loss so far. 45 pounds, that is a huge amount. When you look at 5 pounds of fat is about the same volume as a loaf of bread. Think of 9 loaves of bread. Just put them all over your body. That is the amount of volume that you have lost in fat. That is huge.
Yeah, and you know, it's nice to hear that you're losing that weight at a very slow speed. 1 to 2 pounds is exactly what you want to be losing. You don't want to be going any faster. You need to be slowing down your metabolism, so that's a great speed. It was also very interesting to read the subject of your email. Weight Watchers hooked me. So I'm going to guess you're feeling trapped by the website and all their things they're doing for you. Weight Watchers, they have easy-to-follow programs. It's a double-edged sword because it's hard to leave. You know, they've got you using their system and their points. And so when you leave, you're like, I have to do it by myself now. But it is one of the easiest and sensible diet plans to follow. But again, it is not a lifestyle, which we've been talking about here on the show.
And on the other hand, it's good that you've gone through some of the other diets in the past and have seen that they have some sort of hook to get you into them. When you were talking about the high protein diets convincing you that all carbs are bad, you are missing eating fruit. Now that you're on Weight Watchers, you're starting to miss the simplicity of just eating food without having to rely on counting Weight Watchers points. I'm going to oversimplify all of the diet books that I've read over my life. They all seem to start out for the first half of the book convincing you that carbs are bad or fat is bad, or depending on your blood type or genotype or body shape, you need to eat differently. Then the next quarter of the book tells you all about the supporting studies that have been done and people who have been successful in all of these case studies. And then finally, you know, the last quarter of the book, they tell you about the specific diet plan that you're supposed to follow. The one thing that they all seem to miss is how to be successful long term when you finally leave the diet, when you've hit your goals.
Yeah, you mentioned in your email that just listening to our show makes you feel as if you could carry on this lifestyle without the Weight Watchers website's help. And that has been our goal here on the show. We don't want to put you on a diet. We want to put you on a lifestyle of the thinner person that you want to become for the rest of your life. Know the calories that you'll be able to eat once you reach your goal weight. And just start eating at that calorie level now and for the rest of your life.
And here's an analogy that I always use. Let's say that you have two people who both break their legs and end up in the hospital for a few months. One person is obese and the other person is fairly thin. When they're both in the hospital, they're put on the same, quote, hospital diet and eat the same number of calories. The thinner person might gain 20 pounds in the hospital, and the obese person might end up losing 20 pounds. When they both leave the hospital and go back to their regular lives and start living and eating as they always have been, the thinner person will lose the 20 pounds, and the obese person will gain all of their weight back. It's not that they went on any weight loss diet or any sort of sumo diet. They just went back to their lifestyle of the heavier or thinner person. We are just saying to pretend that you are that thinner person by eating and exercising like that thinner person, and you will trick your body into becoming that thinner person.
So you might be asking yourself, is there a simple way to do it? And the answer, unfortunately, no. There's going to be a time that if Jeff was mentioning this, he'd say you have to suck it up and become truly educated about the nutrition that you're putting in your body and exercise. You can try diet after diet with lots of success with each one while you are following them, but there will reach a time when you realize that enough is enough and it's time to become truly educated and then put all that knowledge into a lifestyle plan that is specific just for you.
And of course, there are a lot of little tricks you can do along the way. Most of the information that you need is here in all of these shows so far. In the first several shows, we started off very basic by covering the macronutrients and how much of each we thought you should be eating. We covered meal frequency, how to calculate how many calories you should be eating. On a couple of the shows, we even listed the best foods to be eating. We talked about the 5 tiers of food, etc., etc. Once you have those basics down, then you can start planning meals and combinations of foods that you like. And it is a lot of work at the start. But once you put in all of that work, after a time, it will truly become second nature. It gets easier and easier. It's like when you become a doctor, the day-to-day might not be that challenging for an experienced doctor, but they put in all the time and the years to get that training at the start.
So now to answer your specific questions, getting off of the Weight Watchers online plan, keeping track of calories, there are a couple different ways that I use. The major one, the one, my favorite one, I mentioned so many times, called the Daily Plate. And it's now a part of the Livestrong Foundation, so livestrong.com. And register there for an online account, and it has the most comprehensive database that I've seen online of foods that you're going to be eating on a daily basis. And everything is in there. There is not one thing that I've found that's not in there. And when you're working online, you can create custom meals. And, you know, if you're eating the same things and you like them over and over again, I have one called F2F Breakfast. And I put that in there and it puts in, boom, it puts my breakfast in there. I don't have to put in these separate little food items. It's just, boom, there it is. I have another one. I put in chicken dinner and boom, there's my chicken, my vegetables, my salad. Everything's in there. I don't have to think about it. And I only have to do one entry instead of eight entries. It's great. So check that out. Also, we use Trainio. Trainio.com for our support site, but they also have a great community there, some information, some food tracking as well. Also a new one, which I just starting to look at, is called Jiminy. And I heard from a friend that they have a really great database of foods as well. So those are three great ways you can keep track of your calories and your weight without having to pay that extra, those fees over at Weight Watchers.
And eventually, we all hope that you don't have to be counting calories as often and recording foods. Eventually, you'll kind of get the feel for how many calories you're eating on a daily basis. So then if you weigh yourself every week and you notice that your weight is starting to creep up a bit, then you cut back on the calories. Maintenance, once you get there, is so much easier. You don't have to work as hard to maintain your weight, especially if you have been eating at that level the entire time while you've been losing the weight. There's no big change once you hit your goal weight. Now, as for exercising, millions of people have the exact same problem with exercise that you do. So what gets those people to get in their exercise when they're just as tired as you when they get home from work? I don't think we need to go into suggestions of specific exercises to do. We just need to get you exercising. So I have three suggestions to help you out. So number one, make yourself a priority. Your health is the most important thing to you. 10 years from now, you will still be in the same body. You will still be you. But your job may change. What should be your priority right now? Something that's going to last for the rest of your life or something that might be a temporary job? Number two, set your daily goals the night before or first thing in the morning and make yourself accountable to their accomplishment. These goals must have a why attached to them. Who is going to exercise just for the sake of exercising when you're tired? Attach some powerful goals with some powerful reasons to get yourself motivated. And my third suggestion, if all else fails, get up earlier to exercise. The worst thing that could happen to you is you'll be tired for work instead of being tired for your exercise. But remember, if in point number one, you make yourself the priority, you will get up a little earlier to get that exercise in.
All right. I want to thank Julie for her email. And if you would like to leave us a comment or ask a question, there's a couple of ways to do it. And that first way is to leave a comment over on the website at fattofitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is to leave a voicemail by clicking on the Call Me button over on fattofitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
Okay, now we're going to skip the old web report for this week so we can get right into our feature section, another interview.
Joining us again is Tom Venuto, who is a well-known fat loss expert and best-selling fitness author. The thing about most fitness experts is that they never seem to change. They have their weight loss dogma that they continue to push year after year, no matter what. What is very interesting about Tom is that over the last 20 years, his message has actually changed. Through all of his experiences, some of the things that used to be really important have turned out to not matter as much, and some of the things that most dieters totally ignore, he has discovered might be the reason why they aren't as successful as they could be. So Tom, you are best well known for Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, this ebook that was released back in 2002. So what was your inspiration and reasoning behind writing this book?
Well, Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, that was my first book that I published as a downloadable ebook from burnthefat.com. And that grew out of my coaching programs because as I started as a personal trainer and then I became a personal coach, I wanted to give my clients something more than just the workout in the gym. I wanted to send them home with something. So I started writing, and I started writing this manual about what to eat because I knew that if my clients left the gym and they didn't know what to eat, that they would just undo all the work we did in the gym. So I started writing a nutrition manual, and it became a personal coaching manual. And over the years, as all my clients started asking me questions, every time I would get a question about nutrition, especially, but also training, I would add it to this manual. And before I knew it, what started as a little 25-page printout that I was handing to my clients about how to eat better turned into this three-ring binder of like 200 pages. And after many years of that, I looked at this and I said, you know, this is a book. It was almost a book. It just had to be rounded out a little bit. And if I turned this into a book, I was completely filled up. I couldn't take any more clients. I figured I could help a lot more people. So I just buckled down. I already had the coaching manual written. I spent about 3 more months it took to take that coaching manual and turn it into a book. That was retitled from the coaching program to Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle. And from there, it went online as an ebook and became very popular.
What type of people were successful following your suggestions in the book and why?
Well, anybody who is serious about fitness and fat loss, and anybody who's a hard worker, people who are detail-oriented and analytical have really taken to the Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle program. People who want to do things by the numbers. Because Burn the Fat, it is very comprehensive, and it's a by-the-numbers program. I actually have people create menu plans on a spreadsheet and count the calories, count the grams of protein, carbs, and fat, do the macronutrient ratios. And funny enough, I found that people like engineers and accountants really loved it. They even take it further sometimes. I have these accountant and engineer clients who take my spreadsheets and they add more graphs and pie charts and they make moving averages and they send these back and, hey, take a look at this. And so that's the kind of person I think who takes to Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle the most.
That's really funny because I followed that program really religiously for at least a year, and I probably follow at least 70% of the concepts in it right now. And I do have all my menus on spreadsheets that calculate all the macronutrients, but that works for me. But I realize that a lot of people don't really want to get into that. So I guess what type of people are really unsuccessful at following that sort of program?
Yeah, you make a good point. People who don't want to crunch the numbers, there's a lot of people like that. They want to be given, say, just some lifestyle guidelines. Eat this, don't eat that. Those people might not be the best candidate for a crunching, detail-oriented program like Burn the Fat. People who don't want to eat 5 to 6 times a day, which is a traditional way of eating for bodybuilders, but is not an absolute necessity, those people might not want to do the Burn the Fat program, at least not the meal frequency part of it. And definitely anybody who's coming into this looking for a quick fix, if somebody wants some kind of easy way, Burn the Fat is just not, it's not for those people. The people who are most attracted to this program, they're actually attracted to Burn the Fat because I was the person who said, look, it's not easy. Okay, you have to work hard in this program and you're going to get rewarded based on how hard you work. So quick fix seekers should look elsewhere.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The publication of Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle really put your name out as a fitness expert and educator. So what were the most rewarding experience for you personally after its publication? So where did its popularity take you today?
Honestly, I've been completely blown away with how far Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle went as an ebook, because I wasn't the first person on the internet to do ebooks. There were people before me doing ebooks. There were a couple of people in the fitness industry and nutrition doing ebooks, but I was one of the pioneers. And so when people heard this idea ebook, they kind of scoffed at it. And since then, Burn the Fat's been downloaded in 143 countries in ebook format. And it's been an incredible way to reach people. It's been very rewarding to know that people all over the country have been able, all over the world have been able to get it because it's an instant download. And what's also been really rewarding is to hear so many people tell me about the results they got. Those success stories I told you about, it's just thrilling. I mean, imagine when somebody is 250 pounds overweight, they're morbidly obese. If you help them to get down to a normal weight, it's more than just cosmetics. It's not even about six-pack abs. It's about changing a person's whole life. We're talking about things like just mobility, just being able to get up out of a chair. This is a guy who could hardly walk to the mailbox without getting out of breath. He couldn't even walk upstairs. You know, so seeing the results, that's what's the most rewarding of all.
So you wrote the new book. It's called The Body Fat Solution. And why did you need to write another book? You know, what's different from this book compared to Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle?
Well, you know, we actually touched on that a little bit already, because we talked about the fact that there's really no single program that's right for everybody, because people have a certain lifestyle they want to live. They have a certain disposition. And for the people that Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle isn't right for, the Body Fat Solution does appeal to them. It's not a strict by the numbers program. It's very flexible, it's more relaxed. It's basically for a much broader audience. The Body Fat Solution, I wrote it for people who are overweight or obese specifically, not for bodybuilders, not for athletes. It's not for the extremely sophisticated dieter who's looking for the latest research study broken down for them. Okay, the Body Fat Solution is for regular people who are experiencing common problems. They don't have any time. They're stressed out at work. They're emotional eaters. They eat comfort food all the time. And they lack motivation, so they're having problems sticking with it. They're fine halfway through the week, and then by the weekend, it just falls apart. And that's who I wrote that for. So Body Fat Solution is really a part of my vision to help the millions of people who are overweight today who might never find Burn the Fat, or they might get intimidated by Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle because of the connection that program had with bodybuilding. So they might say, you know, that program's not for me. That's bodybuilder wrote that. And secondly, the Body Fat Solution, I'm addressing some different problems. You know, we definitely have an obesity problem today. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think that we have a weight loss problem. And I know that sounds like a contradiction at first, but if you look at statistics from reliable sources, we know that 80 to 95% of all people gain back the weight. So that means that lots of people have successfully lost weight. So what's the real problem? Maintenance and keeping it off. People can't stick with it. They can't keep the weight off. I wrote the Body Fat Solution to address those problems.
And you know, there's so many diet books out there from Atkins, Own, South Beach, etc. Do you think all of these different diets that have become popular over the last couple of years, do you think they've helped or hurt America's waistline as a whole?
I think they've helped in some ways and hurt in other ways. I mean, for sure, those diet books you mentioned have helped a lot of people. Even if I could offer some criticisms or we could have a debate about things like Atkins, at the same time, there's plenty of people who've lost weight with Atkins and kept it off with low carb and every other diet under the sun. But there's a big problem with the diet industry in general and the way that these new diets books keep getting churned out. And that is that the whole diet industry runs on novelty. So new diets keep coming out every year and they each have a hook. Something unique is about, you know, what's something unique and different about that book or it's not going to get published. So the author will blame obesity on one thing, one evil culprit is the cause, and then they'll have one magic bullet solution and put it up on a pedestal. For example, it's one hormone, like it's insulin, or it's thyroid, or it's estrogen. It's an anti-estrogen diet. Your testosterone is too low. You got to raise it. It's leptin. It's stomach hormones. It's your PYY, ghrelin, glucagon-like peptide, whatever is the latest discovery. They will create a diet around that, or they'll find some health issue. It's inflammation, so go on an anti-inflammatory diet, and that solves all your problems. It's pH balance. Let's make you less acidic and more alkaline. That'll solve the problem. You're toxic, and on and on and on. All the hooks just keep going, and they're going to keep coming out. And the problem with that is I coined a word for this, a phrase. We've all heard of information overload because we're all experiencing it with the internet today. I coined a phrase called information isolation, and that is what's happening with the diet industry. When each new diet picks out one piece of the puzzle, and funny enough, almost everything that I mentioned and almost every diet probably has some useful information in it, and it's probably based on a thread of truth. But they pull it out and put it up on a pedestal, like if you do this one thing, that will make you lean, and it doesn't work like that because body fat is a complex problem. It goes across every area of your life, and it's not just physical. It's not just nutrition. It's not just training. That's why I wrote the Body Fat Solution, because I acknowledge that it's not which diet program you go on. It's not which diet program you follow. It's what makes you follow your program, and a lot of that is psychological and emotional and social, not just physical.
In the book, you talk about fitness myths that are common today. What are a couple of the myths that really don't seem too bad but end up keeping people from their weight loss and fitness goals?
I think one of the worst is when people say calories don't count. A lot of these diets I mentioned, because they will pick out one thing and say that that's the problem, they'll say that it's not calories. In other words, all you have to do is eat certain foods or eat a certain ratio of protein, carbs, and fat, or just get your hormones in order, or just cut out all the carbs. And forget, you know, don't worry about how much you eat. Just do those things, you'll lose weight. It's pure nonsense. It's a myth that calories don't count. And I think it's the most damaging myth. Some people don't think of calories don't count as being a myth, but I consider it a myth because I see it in so many diet books, is that the calories are getting downplayed. And, you know, nutrition for good health and for improving your fat-to-muscle ratio, obviously it has a lot to do, more to do with than just calories. But the calories calories absolutely matter. The calorie deficit is the condition that has to be there. So if you believe calories don't count, you're going to have a lot of you're going to run into a lot of problems, and that one myth, that one thing can hold you back from anything else working for you.
And that's been around for years and years. I think it was the Atkins diet back in, what, 72 when that first came out. That was really what started that belief.
Yeah, there was actually one, I think, before that. I think there was a book called Calories Don't Count, even pre-Atkins, and it was a low-carb diet. But definitely, I remember in the Atkins diet book, and I have read that cover to cover twice, he said the calorie theory is a millstone hanging around the necks of dieters for years. I remember that quote by memory. Because people, if I have a criticism of Atkins diet, for example, people will say, well, you really have to read the book. So I read the book. I know exactly what he said. And he did say that calories in that versus calories out is a theory. It's not. Scientific fact. It's one of the, it is the single most established fact in weight control today. It's the one thing that all of the legitimate scientists agree on. And you see it in every exercise physiology textbook, every nutrition textbook, and every peer-reviewed paper, except maybe, you know, 0.0001. There might be some dissenter that says it's not calories. But that's the bottom line. Calories in versus calories out. That's where you start.
That's right. It seems so obvious. You mentioned that it doesn't really matter which exact program you're following as long as it's working for you and there's a calorie deficit. A lot of the book talks about the mental issues of weight loss and doesn't really get into a lot of nitty-gritty about nutrition itself. Why do you find that that's more important, the mental issues?
Well, because the mental issues, or the I'd say the non-physical issues, are the reasons people aren't sticking with their programs. The big problem, in a word, is compliance. People not sticking with a program. Whichever program you pick, if you pick the Atkins diet, if that's the one right for you, or if you pick Tom Venuto's Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle program, or any other program, whatever it is, it doesn't do you any good if you can't follow the guidelines. So we need some kind of tools to help us stick with the program. And those tools that I've written about in the new book, they're psychology. It's about thoughts. It's about mental attitudes, especially belief systems, limiting beliefs can hold people back. A single limiting belief, which is this unconscious program in your mind, can hold you back. It can be the reason you sabotage yourself. People keep wondering, why can't I follow the program? Why can't I stick with it? I know what to do. I can't do it. I hear the complaint all the time. And it's because of limiting beliefs. It's because of a self-image, the way you see yourself in your mind. You'll never outperform your self-image. So we got to work on the mental side of things, not just the physical side. So if you take up a program of mental training and physical training at the same time, now you've got an approach that's going to help you stick with whichever program you chose.
So in the book, you make a distinction between emotional and physical hunger. And actually, when I was reading it, you talked about dealing with physical hunger as something that you have to have once in a while in order to reach your goals. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, this is a pretty important concept. There is difference between physical and emotional hunger. First of all, we have to realize that people are eating for reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with fueling your body. Emotional eating is a really big problem. People will eat for all kinds of reasons. Today, especially, we're in the middle of a really bad recession, and people are feeling stressed, and they're getting depressed about it, and they'll feel stress, eat, and that's a cycle that we have to break. And one way to break it is to become aware that it's happening because people are doing it unconsciously. You guys might have heard of the term mindless eating. It's the title of a really good book too, by the way. And that's what's happening is people are eating for the wrong reasons and not even realizing it. So you got to know the difference between physical and emotional hunger and feed your body for real hunger. Like physical hunger, you can tell it's physical because it builds up kind of gradually over time. The emotional hunger comes up like an urge, just like out of nowhere, I got to have this chocolate. I got to get my sugar fixed. Physical hunger, when you do feel it, you can usually wait it out. And I think it's important to know that. The most brilliant line that I've ever heard about hunger was from Judith Beck, the cognitive psychologist. She says, hunger is not an emergency. I love that. If you just can say that to yourself, I'm hungry, it's not an emergency, I don't have to eat. As a matter of fact, if you will take that feeling of hunger and flip it around to something that will actually help you stick with your program, like hunger is actually the feeling of fat cells shrinking. That works pretty well. So you can wait out. If you think like that when you feel hungry, you can wait it out. And another thing I noticed about physical hunger is usually it's just kind of like a general physical sensation, you know, like a grumbling in your stomach. It's like just a general desire for food. And emotional hunger usually comes up. It's a craving for something specific. Like I was saying before, I got to have this chocolate, I got to have this sugar, and that might give you a tip that I don't really need to eat right now, I can wait. And here's the big one. This is the telltale sign. If you eat for physical hunger, you feel satisfied, but if you eat after emotional hunger, you feel guilty. So if you think about the difference, pay attention to your feelings and just stop and have that little conversation in your head before you eat. It's like procrastinate. I know everybody knows how to procrastinate, and I don't believe it if somebody says they don't. So you might as well put that to good use. When you feel a craving, just procrastinate and wait and say, yeah, I'll wait 15 minutes and then see if I still feel it. And you probably won't if it was emotional hunger.
Wow, there's really some good lines in there. I really like that. Hunger is the feeling of fat cells shrinking.
That's one of my favorites.
One thing that I found really fascinating is what you were saying about belief versus willpower. So no matter how much willpower you have, if you don't believe something, your body's going to turn around and fight against it and you won't be successful. So how would you change your belief if you believe that I'm a fat person because I've been fat my entire life?
It's a great question, and it's important to know the difference between belief and willpower. Willpower is trying to change your behaviors with conscious mind, with force. It's trying to change your behavior with force. And changing your beliefs is working on the unconscious level, and that's changing your behaviors automatically. And that's what we call a habit. That's what habits are. Habits is when you execute a behavior without even having to think about it. And we've got good habits, we've got bad habits. We can retrain our minds to change our behaviors so we do the positive things automatically instead of doing the negative things automatically. And to change a belief, or limiting belief, because you want to keep the good beliefs and you want to eliminate or replace the negative ones, you have to know that you have it. Again, it's an issue of awareness, like I said about hunger and emotional eating. You can't solve a problem if you don't know you have it. So you got to draw out your limiting beliefs, and you got to figure out what's stopping you. What are your limiting beliefs? And here's a couple questions that you could ask. You could say, what is causing me to be overweight or unhealthy, or what's causing me to not have the body I want? Sit down with pen and paper and write out the answers. This is a really serious exercise that people should do if they're struggling with that issue of, I know what to do, I can't get myself to do it, or I just can't stick with it. I know I have a program here, I have this diet I want to follow, I just can't do it. Another question would be, what's stopping me from getting leaner? What's preventing me from getting leaner? You ask those questions, you're going to come up with a list. And I hear the same things over and over. I've heard these in my coaching programs for the same things for 15 to 20 years. People are still having the same problems. Overweight because I can't get leaner because I have no time. I'm too old. I hate exercise. It's just impossible when you have 4 kids. It's impossible after you have a knee replacement, et cetera, et cetera. Here's the question. Is that really true? Because a belief is not necessarily the truth. A belief is just an idea in your head, in your subconscious mind. Belief's not a fact. So you may hold inside your own head your belief as absolute reality, but if you break them down and challenge them, you might see it doesn't hold any water. So that's what you do. Identify your beliefs and then challenge them. Is this really true? Just ask directly, is it really true? And then one of my favorite ways of challenging a belief is to find an exception. Like I said, hey, it's impossible to lose weight after you have knee surgery or a hip replacement. Some of the people that I've had in my coaching programs or who followed my Burn the Fat or Body Fat Solution program have had phenomenal success through any injury, hip replacement, bad knees, 50, 60, 70 years old, 4 kids, one of them with a C-section. So if you find an example of somebody who's just like you, who had the same problems as you, and they achieved their goal anyways, then your belief does not hold any water.
So I'm not sure if you consider this a belief or not, but what do you think about this notion of a body's natural weight set point? So when you're looking at an entire family that is heavy, how much of that do you think is really genetics compared to conditioning, you know, in their family environment itself?
Well, the idea of set point has been debated a lot. It's been come up in the scientific research, and there's different thoughts on it. And if we're talking about genetics, then we have to admit that genetics play a role. I mean, they have mapped the human genome, and they have found a lot of genes that are linked to obesity. There's no question there is a genetic component. The question is, what does that mean? Because what you'll find if you really look at it is that lifestyle and environment is bigger influences. Genetics play a role, but lifestyle and environment are what trigger the genetics to make a person become obese. Because if you have a gene, an overweight gene, it really is just a tendency. I mean, think about somebody who's got heart disease in their family. Does it mean you're going to have a heart attack and die of a heart attack? No, it doesn't, but it means you have a tendency, right? And what does that mean? That means you better be really careful about your lifestyle and your environment. You had better not be smoking cigarettes. You better not be overweight. You'd better not be sedentary. You'd better not be a type A maniac all stressed out, because that is going to make that latent tendency come out. And it's the same thing with obesity. I mean, we keep talking about calories in versus calories out, right? So as long as that person with a tendency does not eat in a surplus, they don't have anything to worry about, as long as they don't overeat. But when that person with a genetic tendency, or call it a higher set point if you want, if they overeat, they're asking for trouble, because that's the person who's going to be the most likely to become obese if they have that tendency.
So getting back, for the average person, they want to have long-term success. What are some of the most important nutrition rules that they should follow?
Well, in my new book, Body Fat Solution, I actually set up the nutrition component of the program with 10 rules, because I wanted to simplify it. You know, in my first program, Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, the whole book is about nutrition, and it goes very into detail. So let me give you a few of the most important rules as general as possible. And if your goal is fat loss, rule number one is make sure you're in a caloric deficit. And so the corollary of that rule is keep track of your calories. If you choose not to count calories, that's okay. But then what you have to do is acknowledge this calories in versus calories out rule. And every week, keep track of your progress. If your body fat does not go down, it means you did not have a calorie deficit. Decrease your portion sizes. You might not know how many calories are in your portions if you're the type of person who chooses not to count them, but it doesn't mean you don't need a calorie deficit. You got to cut down your calories. Rule number two, this actually comes from my bodybuilding background, and now I still stand by it, and it's research proven, is build every meal starting with a lean protein. Because not only is the protein important for building muscle, but all the current research is finding out about protein that it's great for suppressing appetite and making you feel fuller, because the protein affects appetite suppressing hormones and satiety stimulating hormones. So eat a protein with every meal. Protein meaning like egg whites, chicken, turkey, tuna, fish. You could even use a protein supplement if you don't eat a whole food protein. Eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. In a perfect world, you'd eat vegetables with every meal. Make sure you include the healthy fats, the omega-3 fats and other types of healthy fats, because one of the big diet crazes over the past couple decades was low-fat diet. And a potential problem, if you take that to an extreme, is you're cutting out the good types of fats, the omega-3s. And one of the best ways to get it is from fish, like salmon, high-fat fish. Don't demonize all carbohydrates. For example, the starchy carbs and grains, in some of the low-carb programs, they will make them sound like a bad guy. I prefer to look at those as a variable. I call the starches in the grains an X factor. So you're going to keep the protein really constant, and you're going to keep lots of fruits and vegetables in your diet. But when it comes to those starchy carbs and those grains, vary that amount to see what it does for your fat loss. And when you need to drop calories, pull them out in the starchy carbs. And primarily focus on natural foods. And this is the big question right here for natural foods. Did it come from a tree, from a plant, from out of the ground, or did it walk, fly, or swim? That's the natural, my definition of natural. And if somebody's a vegetarian, no offense, just use the first half of the definition.
That sounds really good. Some common sense things. One thing I liked is how you have this 90-10 rule, which means that you only have to follow the program 90% of the time to get most of the success. And another thing which was very counterintuitive was this 80-20 rule. So can you tell people about that?
Yeah, 80-20 rule is an oldie but a goodie. That one comes from Pareto. It's also called the Pareto Principle. Vilfredo Pareto was the Italian economist. There's been an entire book on this, and it's been discussed throughout personal development and business success books, and it applies to your nutrition and your training too. Basically, 80-20 rule says 20% of what you do, 20% of your actions you're taking every day is going to give you almost all of your results. The other 80% is minutia. And the problem is most people are wasting their time on minutia, and that's why they seem busy. They seem like they're working hard, but they're not getting anywhere. They're working hard and spending energy on stuff that doesn't matter. So the key with 80-20 rules, find out what's the 20%. That's the important few. Do more of that and do less of the minutia. Do less of the 80%. That's the trivial many.
All right. What about diet supplements and diet pills? You know, are those should ever be part of a really healthy lifestyle?
Well, they can, but that's a really broad question, because you have to take each diet supplement or diet pill individually, and you have to look at the research. And what I've found is the vast majority of them, they either do not do what they claim at all, and I would probably say that's about 95 to 97% of them, I'm sad to say. And for the few that might do something, I find that they don't match the claims in the advertisement. So, for example, green tea is a very popular ingredient to put in a fat burner now because ephedrine, which was proven, Ephedra was proven as a fat burner with clinical research. They pulled that off the market. So now the popular formulas usually have green tea extract. The active ingredient is EGCG. Well, there was a study at the University of Geneva in Switzerland, and they found out that if you take enough green tea extract, which is about 270 milligrams a day, it would increase your metabolic rate over a 24-hour period by about 79 calories. So it's not much, but you would take that, right? I mean, that probably an extra pound. I don't have a calculator in front of me to do the math, but I think it's like an extra pound every, you know, month and a half or so. It's something. But what do you see in the magazines? Take our pill with this green tea extract and you'll lose 30 pounds in 30 days. Complete nonsense. But so we have a big problem, I think, not so much that there's no supplements that could possibly help, but the big problem is that they're misrepresented as to what they can do. In my opinion, the fat burners are part of the minutia. They're not going to do much. They're like that little extra edge. And because so many of them don't work, it's buyer beware unless you have actually gone and looked at those research studies yourself, because you can't take what you read in the advertisements as true.
So if we said diet supplements are part of the minutia, what would be a major thing that would be part of the 20% all the time?
Well, I made my new book as a setup into five principles. I would look at principles because I consider principles and fundamentals to be the foundation. Basically, what I'm saying is look at the big picture. Before you look at any details, make sure that you have the big picture. And the five principles in Body Fat Solution is mental training that we already talked about, which means setting goals and reprogramming the mind, weight training. So, for example, if you're out there looking for the next diet pill and you're not weight training, you're not following the 80-20 rule. You're looking for minutia. You're not even lifting weights, which is so important. Third principle is cardio training. Fourth principle is nutrition. Fifth principle, which we didn't mention yet, is social support. Before you go out looking for that little extra edge, it makes a lot more sense to make sure you've got all the fundamentals in. And those are the five principles or fundamentals that I think you should make sure are all a part of your lifestyle before you go look for any little details.
Yeah, you mentioned social support. And how important is that support system? Now, we've got programs like Weight Watchers that are built on really accountability. You're going in there every week and weighing in. And they also have the meetings. There's a support system there built in. How important is that of those five principles?
In my opinion, I think that social support could quite possibly be the single most important thing that could help you stick with your program. And this has been my emphasis lately, is not how can I tweak this nutrition program to squeeze out an extra 0.2% body fat loss this week, as much as how can I help people stick with their program long term. So I'm looking for compliance tools, and social support is a superb one. There's so much to be said for the buddy system. You might not want to get a trainer. If you can't get a trainer, get a training partner. A training partner is not only going to push you a little bit harder like a trainer would, a training partner is going to make sure you show up. And, you know, like Woody Allen said, showing up is 80%. So if you can't get a training partner, get a support partner. Just say to somebody in your life who believes in you, somebody that's going to support you, whether it's family, spouse, friend, even a neighbor, say, hey, I'm going on a program. I'm setting a goal I'm changing my lifestyle for good, and I'm setting a goal for the next 12 weeks, and I need some help. I need some support, somebody to make me stick to it. That's what accountability is helping you stick with it. Social support is an accountability tool, and it's a lot more than that, too. It's emotional support. If you get with a group, like you mentioned, Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers, out of all of the popular programs, is the one that you probably hear the least negative feedback about and more positive things, and it's probably because they have a social support element. It's not just a diet program. They do have their own diet program, but it's more than that, right? It's social support. And today, what we're seeing happen on the internet is just pretty incredible. The biggest thing on the internet right now is social networking and social networking sites. And it started with Facebook, which was a person's personal page. And then, MySpace. Then it was Facebook. And then it was Twitter. Before that, we had all the blogs coming out, an explosion of blogs, forums, and now certain websites are coming up as kind of like a combination of all those social tools and forums specifically to help us with fitness and our nutrition. And the research, believe it or not, says that the support we even get on the web can be helpful. I don't think it replaces in-person support, but if you can't get in-person support, then go online, because there's no excuse. There's so many places you can go. Even if you go to a forum where you can log in your results and say, hey, here's my program, help me stick to it. I'm going to publish my weight, start a blog, publish your weight on your blog every day. You have all kinds of different options for support. It's endless today with the internet.
Well, thanks, Tom. You gave us so much information in this show, just a ton of different areas that we asked you about, and you just knew those answers right away. I'm sure our listeners will appreciate this. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. It's been awesome.
So, Russ, over the last two shows, what was your impression of Tom Venuto?
Well, he was just a wealth of information. In the personal training interview, just his quotes about, you know, having that personal attention from the trainer and not having a trainer that, you know, is off somewhere else and looking for his next client or checking out who's coming in from the door, that they're giving you 100% attention. I found that was real powerful. How about you?
Well, I noticed from the first interview to the second interview, he was talking about the people who are the most successful when he was personal training are the people who had a vision and a lot of dedication and had goals and kept going through it. And then when years later, when he wrote his second book, he realized that it was really just the mental portion that was the most important thing. So I kind of like seeing that progression from experience to then realizing that things are a little bit more mentally important than just the physical.
Yeah, you know, and he had that great quote, and make sure I get it right here, that physical hunger is the feeling of fat cells shrinking, and that you have to really differentiate between emotional hunger and physical hunger. You know, and I do that all the time. You know, I'd be driving home and I had a bad day at the office and I'm thinking, what junk can I put in my body right now to make me feel better? And as soon as you realize that, you know what, I'm not eating because I'm hungry. I'm looking for that fat food so I can make myself feel a little bit better. I think that's really the big part of the second interview is disconnecting your emotional self from the physical there and just keeping the emotional in rein so it does not derail your weight loss goals.
Yeah, that's so true. And you know, the one thing that I find really interesting is our philosophy on the show is eat like that thinner person to become that thinner person for the rest of your life. And he's talking all about maintenance, which is not really going on a specific diet and losing your weight and then going off a diet and gaining it all back. We've really come to the same conclusions from different positions. And really, we're saying the same things just in different words, but we're truly on the same page. So I find that really neat.
And also, in relationship to our show, you know, he's talked about accountability. And every week, I'm on the show telling my weight and talking about my goals and my motivation. And, you know, it's accountability. And he talked about that in the first interview. And then support. We set up the Fat to Fit support website. So those who are, you know, listening along with the show can have a community to help them with their weight loss. And I find it interesting that he has both those things in his book as being important parts of the whole maintenance and weight loss.
Well, I think the last point that I have here, right at the very end of the book, he's talking about strategies to maintain your weight and your lifestyle. And the one thing he mentioned is to become some sort of teacher or trainer and inspire other people to keep their weight off. And that is really one of the main strategies of how I'm doing it myself. Because if I put on 50 or 60 pounds and I'm doing this show, I'm just going to feel like a total tool if I've gained all this weight because I'm trying to inspire other people. So we had even strategies that apply to me.
So I hope everybody got a lot of information out of those two interviews with Tom Venuto. And we'll have links on the website at fattofitradio.com for all of Tom's information, where you can find Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, and the new book, The Body Fat Solution. Again, those will be at the website. Take a look at those links and check out the books.
All right. Well, let's move into the recipe of the week.
All right. So this week I've been jonesing for some shrimp of all things. And so I found this great recipe over at thefoodnetwork.com. And it's for chipotle shrimp taco with avocado salsa verde. It looks great. And it's only 233 calories per serving. And I think this avocado salsa would be good on anything. But the fact it's on shrimp tacos just sounds great. You know how I love Mexican. So take a look at the show notes for the link to the chipotle shrimp taco with avocado salsa verde. All right, Jeff, what kind of homework do we have for everybody at home this week?
Well, last week, the homework was to get a measuring tape and start measuring some measurements of yourself on a regular basis to track your improvement. But where are you putting those measurements? The homework this week is to make sure that you have some sort of success journal where you can keep track of the things that you're recording, such as your weight, body fat percentage, and measurements. It can be something simple like a small journal, agenda, or even a regular calendar that you write on. Even if your progress seems slow on a daily or weekly basis, you can always look back over the weeks and months and see the progress that you have made. So homework this week, very simple. Start recording all of the things that you track on a daily basis.
Okay, and what is our motivational quote for the week?
Well, this week's quote comes from Thomas Carlyle, and he said, "The block of granite, which was an obstacle in the pathway of the weak, became a stepping stone in the pathway of the strong."
All right, that's a great quote. And we want to thank Tom Venuto for coming on the show and sharing some great information with us. We'll have links back to Tom's website, as well as where you can pick up the books Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, and his new book, The Body Fat Solution. Again, those will be on the website at fattofitradio.com. And thank you all for downloading and for listening. We will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast at fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.